Jenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jenna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. The following is a paid program, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent the opinions of the management of this station or Hamel Broadcasting. And good morning, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour. Here, John Spilbor, Carol Pesci, this guy named Frankenberry, and we are back with another show. And we've got a very good guest today, and one I know that Jenna and Carol, both of you, were excited to talk to.
Definitely.
We sure were. And I got to tell you something. She's coming out with a new book that will drop 2 days after this show airs. And the book is entitled The Fire That Makes Us. And the author of the book and the fabulous guest who we're speaking with today is Dr. Shahrzad Jalali. Now, here's her thing. I mean, among other things, she has a fantastic biography. The book is about how to turn our trauma, our traumatic experiences, basically around so that we can, instead of suffering with them or from them, we can actually help grow ourselves and be better because of them. And the way she writes this book, which we'll get into in our discussion with her, is just genius. She is fabulous to talk to. And so when we come back a little later in the show, we're going to have a fantastic in-depth discussion with Dr. Shahrzad Jalali.
Yes, and I did listen to early portions of the interview, and she does an interesting thing where she kind of fictionalizes some of it as well, turns it into a story.
Which I love, yeah, because it's really based, something that happened traumatic in her own life is the jumping off point for this book. And I love that she basically put her money where her mouth is in writing this. But instead of saying this is all about me, she turns the main character into sort of a fictional character, but based on real life experience. Again, it's really genius.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. So I know that we have discussed over the last number of weeks with some of our new shows. Jenna, how are you, by the way, on being being overrun and Kat's totally ignoring all the dollars you spent and all the time spent and the architectural degree and the engineering degrees that you suddenly have to just ignore them.
So I'm not sure if we told. I know that I did post on Facebook, because sometimes if I don't post these cat foibles on Facebook, I probably will just explode from all the catness going on in my life. But so you guys, if in case anybody doesn't know, I had a new cat come into my house. I thought it was
accidentally
pregnant. Right. Yes. I didn't even invite it. My housekeeping crew invited it, thinking that it was actually my cat. It never was my cat. I had no intention of it ever being my cat.
Oh my God. Only
and then,
you.
And then when last we spoke on air, I think I was telling you guys, I'm like, ooh, this cat, this uninvited cat might be pregnant. And then off air, I sent you guys a picture from behind of its belly to see if you thought maybe. And anyway, 4 days after that show, the cat gave birth in my living room. So that answered that. To three of the ugliest kittens I've ever seen in my entire life. I'm like, you know, if you're going to make a cat have kittens in my living room, can they at least be cute? No, I mean, of course, they're cute. They're kittens. But so I've been contending with that as of today, as of the day we're recording this. They are 2 weeks old. They are living under my living room couch. They are very hard. They're not walking yet. Because they're almost there. Probably by the end of this weekend, I will need to move them into some sort of container. And I don't mean like a little box. I mean the one that I've built in my living room at a cost of several hundred dollars that I would live in. I built a little hallway. I have a little umbrella canopy. It's got.
Oh, I saw that. It's almost like a diorama.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, like you could put Lego people in there, and that's their new home.
You totally could. Like, I would sit, you know, cross-legged and read a book in there. Like, it's fabulous. And I had intended it for this little cat family because I can shut the door. The mother can hop on some cat furniture, get in and out, but the little babies won't be able to. But no sooner did I construct it that she got offended. Mama cat got offended and decided to move these little rugrats underneath my couch on my expensive rug. Now, I'm letting that happen for the time being because I don't have a choice. I did move them back into this little cat condo. The mother was like, forget you. She went in, she plopped them back under the couch. I figured I was not going to win the battle against this cat. But the funny sidebar to this is Mama Nance, my mother, who I've been hiding my double life as a cat person from for a long time, is kind of up to speed. She's a few cats short of what's actually in my house.
So what is actually in your house?
You ask me every week.
I appreciate you trying, Carol.
My mother was asking and I'm like, Mom, she won't tell me.
I will call Mama Chewy and I will tell her that she cannot tell you. I will tell her. But so my mother is a few cats short. Nobody really knows. But what she said to me actually just this morning, so I'm sending her video of the little cats to show their progress. They really do grow kind of fast, you guys. Like they're almost double the size. They're only 2 weeks old. They're probably double the size of when they were newly born. And they're just starting to get up on all fours and wiggle around and try to stand. And it's cute. And it's cute to watch. But my mother, of course, says to me, where are they going to the bathroom? Like, I noticed you sent those pictures under your couch, but I don't see a litter box. So as luck would have it, so here's another interesting thing. These little cats, while they're only eating, they're nursing. There's no food involved yet. That doesn't happen for about another week. So they really don't, I know this sounds weird, but they really don't go. Like what happens is the mother has to, you know, tend to them. But think about it, though. The only thing going in that little cat body, the little kitten bodies, is the mother's milk. That's it. There's nothing else going in those little bodies. So what she's consuming, you know.
Frankie Mary, did you know this fun fact?
I did not know this fun fact, but it does not surprise me at the same time if you think about it.
Right. I mean, think about scientifically, there's not a lot going on just yet. But right.
I mean, even when we had the five kittens after the cat had adopted my brother and sister and I, this is a thought that never occurred to us until we realized we needed the next step.
Right.
It's like they just kind of did this. This is what they did on their own. You know, we did what we were going to do. Hey, we're going to hover over you. Okay. We have provided you with blankets and towels, and then we're going to hover some more. And eventually we went, okay, now we're going to hover over litter boxes because it seems to be about that time.
Exactly. So according to the ChatGPT, that time is not going to happen for about another week. So in another week, I definitely have to move them into the cat condo. I bought special kind of milk that you mix with baby cat food and turn it into a gruel.
Who are you?
I do not even know. So did you know? I now know what a gruel is. Did you guys know what gruel?
No.
Frank Bear, you know what gruel is? Oh, I didn't know what it was, but I'm about to make me some gruel in a few days because that's what these little kittens are going to need to eat.
It's like nasty oatmeal. That's all.
Yeah, how do you plan on keeping those kittens in the condo? Mama's going to just keep taking them out.
Well, what I'm hoping is that she learns that she can get a break and get out of the condo and leave them right where they are. Because I can already tell, don't get me wrong, she's being a good cat mom. But every once in a while, she's like, oh, I just wish I could run and play like I used to. And so I think as they get older, maybe instinctively, she's going to want to be a little bit more separate from them.
Right.
At times.
Right. And also as they're growing so quickly, as you said, you know, I mean, it won't be long before they're already wanting their own rooms anyway, before they're teenagers and telling mom to go away and get out of their business.
True.
True.
You know, and you have provided that for them, their own places. Now they're just going to fight over which one gets the best room.
I think, and I think you're precisely right. And the plan is, so I don't think I can do it before their 6 weeks, so maybe another month. But at some point, this crew, minus one, and their mother are going to be going someplace else.
Wait, what? What?
Well, so, okay. See, the thing is, when you give birth to kittens like I have, it is a wonderful opportunity to socialize a little kitten from the day they're born, which in turn makes them fun cat to have around, as opposed to like in the past when I've captured feral kittens who hated my guts then and still hate my guts today, who don't want to cuddle or do anything. This is a whole different experience. So I figure if I take the least ugly one, you know, like when they start.
And
if I keep it, the least ugly one, that I'll have a cat that might like me. And that might make all of this freaking effort not for nothing. That's what I'm thinking.
What are you doing with with the mother and the other two?
They got to go too.
Where are they going?
Someplace else, someplace where they're going to be loved, but not at my house.
Is this going to be a doorbell ding and dash kind of thing again with one of your cousins?
Ding dong dash?
Yeah, ding dong dash, that what you call it, okay?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do because my cousins have, you know, basically shut the door in my face. But that's okay. I have other takers to ding dong dash. And if I don't tell them I'm ding dong dashing, they won't know it's me. So
do you have any friends that don't have doorbell cameras?
I don't have any friends, period, except for you and Jeannie and Deb and Amy and all that good stuff. So, but you'll know. So I got to think of a plan B.
I wonder if Deb Hanlon would take one.
Deb.
Yeah.
Wow. Good one. I do know where she lives. I do know where she lives. And you know what? What if I ding dong dash like on a back door where maybe there's not a good camera?
Well,
you know,
maybe we're due for a double caper. We haven't done that in a while where we put on disguises and mustaches and sunglasses and...
I still have mine. We are so due. We are so due for a double caper. You know, we might have to trek all the way up to Albany, Curly, because I've got... So think about it. I'm going to have 5 cats to give away. What if I put a $100 bill, like on a little bow around each of their tails? Do you think I got a better shot?
Wait, how'd you get to 5?
Well, because I'm going to have to give away new mama plus 2 of the 3 babies. So that's 3.
Yep.
And then the original ones, Ziggy and her mama, which kind of started this whole thing. Like if it weren't for them, my housekeepers wouldn't have accidentally let a new cat in.
Oh, right. Okay. Right? Oh, right. Okay.
And Ziggy, who's now about a little over 3 months old, has so much. She bounces off the wall. Like that cat has some energy. So she's got to go to a place where there's other cats that she can roll around with because she's a fun cat.
And are Ziggy and her mother living?
Downstairs. They take turns taking care of the new ones. It's so funny because this little 3-month-old Ziggy is a female and she has motherly instincts, but she's so young that she's bad at it. So she goes under the couch and she'll try to like lick the kittens, but kittens will be like thrown up in the air like a mouse toy. And then she'll try to hug it and like bat it around and like, hey, Ziggy. And she's like, what? So it's fun to watch. But they can take a little licking, these figuratively and literally, these little kittens. So they're enjoying it. It's like a little village.
I can't believe you.
You know, someday, someday I am going to get my life back. I am going to get my life. And then I'm going to write my own book. Instead of it being called The Fire That Makes Us, it'll be called The Felines That Take Us. How's that?
Oh, was that nice to go?
Nicely done. Yes, and a good seg there. Very nicely done. Very nicely
done. That was a segue. Yeah, because we do have a nice long discussion with our upcoming guest with a book that you guys can either pre-order today, or if you just wait until Tuesday, September 9th, it will drop, available on Amazon. So is the pre-order. When we come back from the break, we are talking with our fabulous guest, Dr. Shahrzad Jalali. She recently wrote the book, The Fire That Makes Us, all about taking life traumas, and who doesn't have any, and turning them into things that make us better, and just turning them into triumphs. And we're going to be talking with Dr. Jalali right after this break.
All right, that sounds good. You've got Jonna Spillboard, you've got Carol Pesci, you've got some guy, and we'll be back with our guest. This guest that the two of these folks, these two ladies, are very, very excited about, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy as well. So please stick around.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back again, everyone. It's Happy Hour. Jonna Spillboard, Carol Pesci, this guy they allowed to be around. And it's time now to get to our guest for today.
And this is the moment we've been waiting for, because we have an amazing guest. And I have to apologize to our listeners, because we don't also video this show, although we should. Because our next guest, Dr. Shahrzad Jalali, is not only a licensed clinical psychologist, trauma expert, and the author of the soon-to-be-released book, The Fire That Makes Us, but she's absolutely gorgeous. If this clinical psychologist thing doesn't work out for you, doctor, you probably have a career in movies.
I wish. Otherwise, I've never would have done psychology. I would have gone down that path.
It's never too late. But let me tell our audience a little bit more about you. So, and I love this. I love this bio. Your work blends science and soul with over a decade of, experience treating trauma, anxiety, identity loss, and emotional exhaustion. Dr. Jalali specializes in helping high achievers, women in transition, and adult survivors of childhood wounds rewrite their emotional narratives from breakdown to breakthrough. I love that. Your forthcoming book, The Fire That Makes Us, is both personal and clinical, a compelling look at how life's hardest moments can become the most meaningful. It's a message of resilience written for anyone who's felt broken, stuck, or on the verge of becoming something more. Dr. Jalali, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Wonderful to be here.
Oh, boy. Okay. I'm very excited about this for a number of reasons. Because first of all, I think your bio and the description of the book is speaking directly to me. Because I often feel broken, stuck, and on the verge of becoming something more. But let's talk. I do have some specific questions for you. But let's talk specifically about what compelled you to write this book, The Fire That Makes Us.
Wow, that's a very loaded question for me. So as you mentioned, what I generally do is work as a clinician. But I went through something very traumatic in my own personal life, and I was seeking a lot of therapy because I was both physically and emotionally very hurt. It was a car accident that resulted in the loss of my father and very severe wounding of myself. So I was going through a lot of therapy, trying to come back to myself. And as part of this process, I was doing a lot of writing, which I usually like to do when I'm dealing with something heavy. At one point, one of my sisters picked up some of this writing and said, "You need to publish this." And I had never thought about writing a book or being an author. And it was very tough for me to do that because it was such a vulnerable thing for me, given the fact that it was about something that I had personally experienced. So I thought about it a little bit, and I put my own personal trauma together with an amalgamation of the trauma I had seen in my clinical practice over the past decade, which was mainly relational trauma. So I started depicting his story. The book is based on a character named Charlotte, which is technically me, but not in its entirety, because part of the book is obviously fictional. And I talk about how we go through life thinking we are doing just fine, and we are completely in control and in charge, and nothing is dictating our actions. But in reality, it's the unresolved traumas that are pushing us forward, and we are living a life that's not really authentic, but a result of what has happened to us. And in reality, we're so much more than that story. So the book tells Charlotte's story, and at the end of each chapter, I stop, I explain the psychology of that dynamic, and I give tips on how to work with that if you're going through something that is similar to that dynamic.
Well, I did not know that you suffered such a car accident with a very devastating result. And I'm sorry to hear that. And that is huge. And I imagine that your audience, or the audience for this book, will be people who they could have suffered something as big or maybe smaller traumas. And if you don't mind, this is going to sound like a stupid question, and Carol knows I specialize in stupid questions, but this has been bothering me for a long time. Can you give us a real definition of what trauma means in this sense, right? Because it's a word that's used so much, childhood trauma and all these traumas. What does it mean? What does it mean when we say trauma?
First of all, let me start by saying that's not a stupid question at all. And I'm very glad you're asking it, because I feel like these days we just throw that word around and a lot of people don't really know the clinical meaning behind it. But trauma is a psychological and an emotional response to an event or a series of events that is deeply distressing, overwhelming, or threatening to a person's sense of safety and stability. It can come in a form of an accident, an assault, a natural disaster, or an ongoing stressor like abuse, neglect, systemic oppression, or anything else that kind of happens over time. So it's not just about what happens. It's also about how your mind and your body interprets this going forward. So two people can go into a car accident at the same time. One of them may come out of that with PTSD, and the other one may be able to digest it a lot more. Now, that doesn't mean the other person doesn't have trauma, but the level this has impacted them is significantly different. And trauma can have different types. It can be acute, which is very overwhelming, chronic, which is repeated and prolonged, or complex, which is multiple layers of trauma that a person has endured throughout their lifetime.
So, Dr. Jalali, this is Carol. Excuse me, Jonna. I just want to say, John and I are both avid readers and consumers of self-improvement. I can't even count how many books I've read personally. I absolutely love your approach to this book that blends a somewhat fictional character and it gets inside of her head and tells a story integrated with the clinical aspect and your interpretation of it. I just want to tell you that it's brilliant, and we learn and remember in stories. And I just want to say, I think your book is going to have a phenomenal impact on people who pick it up and read it. I'm just thoroughly impressed. I've begun to read it. I know we were able to get our hands on a little bit of an advanced copy. And I have to tell you, I've already learned something from it, in that when people go through something very challenging, and as you just described, it could be an acute traumatic quick event that changes the course of your life forever. It could be something that builds, that continuous, and that results in trauma also. But that the therapeutic approach to that is not about helping you forget what happened. It's helping you reframe it and create new meaning. And the wonderful message there is that's available to anybody.
That's very kind of you to say. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And it makes a lot of sense, though, too, because is it safe to say that even though you know trauma can be different for everybody, and a person's response can be different from the next person's response, is it safe to say that we will all suffer some sort of trauma probably multiple times over the course of our lives? And the better we learn how to deal with and process it, the better our lives become. Like you're saying, we can take something that's bad and turn it into a benefit.
Absolutely. I don't think anyone can go through this life without escaping some form of trauma. I mean, just pick up you know, newspaper every day and just look at what's happening in the world on a daily basis. Even if you're not personally kind of impacted by an individual trauma, you're living in a world that at this point feels very traumatic in many shapes or forms. Every time we go through something like this, we are spending a part of ourselves in surviving it. I mean, we go through things every day, right? And we kind of come out of it. We even forget that we went through it at times. But no one talks about the price we paid to survive that. It's usually an aspect of our being. What do I mean by that? Let's say I was betrayed, and that's one of my traumas. That betrayal has resulted in me not feeling safe, me not being able to trust. Yes, I survived the betrayal and I move on, but at what cost? Now I am living in a world that feels very unsafe to me. Now I can't develop relationships that feel good to me. Now I get into relational dynamics continuously waiting for the other shoe to drop. So I'm not feeling any intimacy, any closeness. Other people don't enjoy my presence because I am this wounded person who's potentially passive, aggressive, both of those things at the same time. So everything we go through comes at a price. And what I'm hoping to bring attention to is for all of us to go back and figure out what parts of ourselves have we sacrificed to be able to make it in this world till this minute. And how do we regain back access to those parts of ourselves? Because that's where our authentic self is, not this shell of a person that we all carry around that has all these scars and wounds from all the battles we fought.
That is absolutely profound. And I wrote down some of the things that you said, especially when you said, so, okay, so trauma then, and correct me if I'm wrong, will affects how our personalities in a sense, because you said this phrase, it affects if people, other people do not enjoy your presence, which I think from time to time, I may be one of those people that, whose presence is not enjoyed. It's due in some part to, I guess, maybe a trauma unrecognized. Can we talk about that? Like, how do you even know?
Good question.
Right? How do you even know if you have trauma and that's what's causing your defects, for lack of a better word?
That's a great question. We are triggered often. And as a result, our reactions are not responses, they are reactions. So if I find myself being annoyed or upset or mad most of the time, and those are just a few emotions of name, the list goes on, that tells me my behavior is reflecting those feelings that I'm feeling.
Oh, wow.
And if I had to guess, those behaviors aren't going to be very pleasant. And these behaviors repeated over time, guess what they become? Your personality. But it's not your personality in its true essence. It's the personality you picked up in order to survive this thing we call life. And my work goes back to you figuring those patterns out and renegotiating a different truth with them. Wow. So that you become more realistic with your emotions. You talk about them, you face them, you kind of are able to work through them. So how you show up in everyday life is actual responses to phenomena, not reactions.
And Dr. Jalali, for anybody who's listening right now who can who resonates with what we're talking about, I also want to point out that part of what you're saying is how we responded in the moment or shortly after to whatever it was we went through was, and you've used this word a few times, a survival mechanism,
right,
in essence. And that was the best we had access to in that moment. So no beating yourself up for who you are or what you've become or what your triggers are. That's what you had access to That's what you used, what you had in your arsenal to respond. Good for you. That may no longer be working for you today. And you help people go back and say, okay, let's explore this again. And how can you change how you're looking at it? How can you change how you respond to it that better suits your life today? Is that accurate?
Absolutely. In fact, when you do this type of work, you have a lot of compassion for what you have done. Because most of us have a list of regrets. Oh, I should have done this at that point. How come I didn't respond to this phenomena better? But to your point, most of us, 99% of the time, do the absolute best that we can. So with what we had access to, we made the best decision, chances are. And even if we didn't, so what? People make mistakes all the time. So the first step is to actually have compassion for everything you went through and how beautifully you've survived it. But now that we're here, what do we do so that we don't continue to live in survival mode for the rest of our lives? Because we all deserve better.
You know what this, I'm getting a sense, and I could, and again, I could be off, because everything that you say, you know, I look at these, sometimes I look at our interviews as personal therapy sessions.
Yes.
And this seems to be one of them. But so I'm going to tell you something weird about me, and then you can tell me exactly how weird it is. So for example, when you talk about in the book, trying to help people figure out what kind of inner work is necessary to kind of fix your challenges, right? I feel like here's one challenge that I go through routinely. I will get mad at somebody because they did something, didn't do something. They did something that in some sense hurt me. And it doesn't have to be big. I don't mean like intentional. I mean, they drop a ball. They do something that has an effect, a negative impact on my life. And then I'll get mad at that person for doing that. And then I'll sit in that for a minute and I will say, no, that is not that person's fault. Whatever that person did that affected my life is my fault or my responsibility. And in a real sense, I believe that. And the second that I take that on myself and stop being mad at the other person, I feel a sense of relief. The problem is, it's like trying to bake a pie without putting all the ingredients in. I stop there. I stop at that part of the analysis and I just move on. And like, I never really fix why I feel like it's my responsibility or why that makes me feel good. Do you think I need to admit myself into a psych ward for a very long period of time?
Not just yet. But I'll tell you as well what you're doing. You are kind of taking on the responsibility because it's easier for you to blame yourself versus change somebody else or a situation because it gives you a little bit of control. However, the problem is it comes with a price. What is the price? Shame. Because now you're the one who's constantly doing something wrong. And the truth of the matter is we don't even need to be looking for, you know, some whose fault it is. It doesn't matter at the end of the day. Let's say you played a role in it and they played a role. What matters is you're having strong emotions, which is anger to something. Mm-hmm. And usually anger is a secondary emotion that we feel as a result of a primary emotion, which is hurt. So you've been hurt in some ways. And your way of processing that hurt is, well, I deserve it because it must have been my fault, which is not true. So there you go. Just with these 2 minutes, we've recognized a pattern that you need to renegotiate with yourself.
See, this is amazing. This is that. Because the next step is probably, it may be a more difficult step, which is why I stop at the easy step. I just blame myself and let's move on. You know, let's go rescue another cat or... But this is great. Can we talk? I know we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I'm looking, you know, at the table of contents of your upcoming book. And you have posited all of the chapters, 20 chapters, as this versus that. So for example, and I like the first one is remembering versus forgetting. What are people going to take out of the very first chapter of this book? What are you talking about there?
Yes, these are dilemmas that we face on a daily basis. Like to your point, someone does something mean to us or bad, and then we get stuck. Should I remember this so I don't get hurt anymore, or should I forget it? And then we kind of negotiate that truth with ourselves. But so I bring up these dilemmas and I help people kind of figure out how they need to address them. For example, in the chapter that you pointed out, the point isn't to remember or to forget. The point is to remember with ease. Right? So when something happens to us, something tough, it gets dismembered from our psyche. It's kind of like cutting off your hand. Now we want to reattach it so we remember that into our psyche.
Wow.
But not the way we remembered it before, which is just trauma, which is just chaos, which is just pain. We want to renegotiate it in a way that feels tangible for us. And that's trauma work.
You are so brilliant.
Oh my God. I know.
I'm serious. What I've learned in just, you know, the past 15, 20 minutes speaking to you and just starting your book, and I cannot wait to finish it. Just, you have the capacity, Dr. Jalali, to just really have a tremendous impact on people. And I'm so grateful that you've chosen this path as a clinician, that you can work one-on-one with people, but that you've put the love and the time and the effort and the care into putting this into a book so you can share more of yourself with the world. You're going to have a tremendous impact. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you.
In taking these weighty concepts and bringing them to us in a way that people who aren't, you know, in the medical profession, for example, can truly understand. And the fact that you're walking the walk, because not only do you do this for other people, but you put your money where your mouth is by using your own trauma. And I imagine how this book, the way it's written, you know, is not sort of like a textbook, but kind of like, what was that book called? Like Who Moved My Cheese, right? That's a terrible, right?
Yeah.
But it teaches you in a very real sense, even though it's about a mouse. So this is fantastic. And I can't wait. So for anybody else who wants to get their hands on Dr. Jalali's book, it actually will drop this Tuesday. So our show is airing on Sunday in 2 days, but I know for a fact, because I've done it, you can go on Amazon and you can pre-order the book, which again is called The Fire That Makes Us. Dr. Jalali, I know that you have a clinical practice. If people want to connect with you, follow you on social media, in addition to getting your book, what is the best way to do that?
Yes, I try to put a lot of informational clips on YouTube, on TikTok, on Instagram. The account is under Align Remedy, which is the name of one of the practices we have here in Southern California. The two practices that I run here, Dr. Jalali and Associates and Align Remedy, so they can find us through our websites, through social media, and we'll be glad to help anyone we can in any shape or form.
That's fantastic. So they can go to Align Remedy on all the socials and find
yes.
you. And again, the book is called The Fire That Makes Us. It's available for pre-order on Amazon. It drops on Tuesday. I know you're going to have wild success, and I can't wait to finish the book. I'm sure Carol can't either. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Dr. Jalali.
My pleasure.
Yes, thank you very much. Listen, we are not done with Happy Hour just yet. We still have segment number 3 on the way. So please stick around. Jonas Spielberg, Carol Pesci, and this dude. We'll be right back.
Donna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time here to Happy Hour. Jonas Spielberg, Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Frankenberry.
So,
I don't think we've ever done it better. We've
I was
never
just going to say,
better.
that was very nicely done. Very
that
nicely
was
done.
In sync. That was salt and pepper.
Yes, it was. It was a very nice job. And also a fantastic conversation that you all had with the doc.
Mm-hmm.
She's so intelligent.
But yet down to earth. Like,
yes,
the whole concept of trauma and how it happens and how we work through it is very, very clinical. It can be very, over my head for sure. She brings it down to street level so that you can actually understand it and benefit from it. And because, look, it happens to everybody. And trauma, and we talked about this, trauma is one of those concepts that we all talk about. It's, you know, you can't have a conversation without speaking about childhood trauma and all these traumas. It's sort of like the word narcissist, right? We hear it bandied about all the time. Do we really understand it? And more importantly, how do we work through it when we have it ourselves? And we all do. Trauma.
Yeah, she was great. And again, I said this when we talked to her, if you're just tuning in. So the book is the Fire That Makes Us. And she takes it an amazing approach by fictionalizing a character that's somewhat based on her. So we learn to remember through stories so that the fictional aspect of what this person goes through, you get kind of inside their head. And then she does the clinical analysis after that each section, but does it in a way that, okay, so any person can understand what she's saying. It's not like you have to be a psychotherapist yourself to understand what she's talking about. It's brilliantly done.
Yeah, exactly. And that it makes it make sense, and you don't have to be. And that's the other thing that I didn't talk to her about, but probably should have. Like, I think people might be embarrassed sometimes to even acknowledge that they have a trauma, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to think that there's something about you that happened maybe a long time ago and is keeping you from being everything you want to be, or makes you feel broken, or makes you have personality defects, like the one we pointed out when we did talk to her, my own. And, you know, and those are the things that we have to work on. And it's not, you don't have to be ashamed to work on any of that stuff in your past.
Right. And nor do you have to be afraid of it. I think when we have horrifying or difficult things that we've experienced and they're painful, we have a tendency to like want to push it away, avoid it, forget it, which is really not going to happen. But as she was explaining, to help someone who's been traumatized not forget what happened, but repackage how they view it and how they respond to it, so it doesn't become this weight that's constantly with you. It can actually lift you up by changing how you view it, changing how you respond to it. And that's exactly what she does. And how great that you don't not that there's anything wrong with therapists, but you don't necessarily need to have an appointment with her and have a one-on-one consult. This book is designed to help you manage your way through that.
Very true. And think about it, that it is kind of, yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with therapy either. But when it comes to the concept of trauma, you don't know when it's going to happen, and you can't necessarily stop it from happening, mm-hmm. right? So you learning how to cope and deal and work through in a positive way is going to help you forever. Yep. So that's another bonus to this book.
Yep.
So, but Barrows. You know what else?
What?
The other bonus is I think that's it for this show.
That's a bonus. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, for Jonas Billboard.
That's our time.
Yes. For Carol Pesci, for the doc, thank you so much for joining us and enlightening us at the same time. And to all the cats, to all the cats we've loved. And still love.
And still do.
And still do.
If you'd like to be on my Ding Dong Dash list, I will deliver a cat with a $100 bill tied to its tail. Please email me or send me a message, and you will be Ding Dong Dashed very soon.
All right. Well, there you go. Offers that can't be refused. All right. We'll talk to you all again next week. Again, for Jonas Billboard, Carol Pesci, I'm this guy, Frankenberry, and we've got more Happy Hour in the future to come, so stick around.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonas Billboard and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104online.com.